Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I am Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk, talking on mic into a little foam box. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Today, Craig and I have our last conversation about the shows we saw across the pond. Finally, we make it to the West End. But first, let's do some Theater Folk news. New plays, we've got new plays in the Theater Folk news section. How appropriate is that? I'm gonna stop singing now. See, I start these things, I dive into them, and I think, oh, that's not going to sound too goofy or awkward. And then I'm in the middle, and I'm like, wow, this is goofy and awkward. Welcome to my world. Okay, so I want to send out a big shout out for one of our newest plays, Scarlet Expectations of a Drowned Maiden and Two Greek Queens by Robert Wing. It is so new. It's got that new play smell, and it is just a wonderful gem of a comedy. So in this play, legendary TV talk show host D.D. Dane welcomes women who just can't seem to get it right when it comes to men. But D.D.'s guests aren't just any women. These relationship-challenged women are none other than some of literature's most memorable characters. We've got Hester Prynne from The Scarlet Letter, Ophelia from Hamlet, Miss Havisham from Great Expectations, Penelope from The Odyssey, and Medea from, well, Medea. It's funny. It's got great characters. You have to check it out just to see how Medea acts in a this talk show world. It's a fantastic competition piece, minimal staging. Go to our website, read the sample pages now. Do it. Or, you know, wait till the end of the podcast. That would work too. Lastly, where, oh, where can you find this podcast, this awkward, goofy podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on the Stitcher app, and you can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search on the word Theater Folk. Episode 48. 48! That just means we're two away from 50, because I can do math. Okay. Episode 48. Is it the show or the performance? This is a pretty big question to ponder when it comes to seeing theater. A less than stellar show can be saved by an awesome performance. And a good show can be completely sunk by something subpar. And as a theater artist, when you're going to see shows, I think it's part of the job of being a theater artist to distinguish, to make that distinction with what you're seeing and where the success lies or where the fault lies. You cannot tar everything with the same brush. I like this. I don't like this. You have to figure out what it is specifically that you don't like or you do like about what you're seeing. And when we were in London, we went to see two shows in the West End for which we were seriously contemplating this question before we went. One Man, Two Governors, a modern version of the Commedia play One Servant, Two Masters, and the Sondheim musical Merrily We Roll Along. And we also have a special treat. It's not just Craig and I talking into the little phone box. We have we're joined by an old university friend who, fun fact, was actually in the play, as opposed to figuratively or metaphorically. Julia was in a play where Craig and I first met and fell in love over 20 years ago. Everybody say, or ew, depending how you feel about cast romances. On with the podcast. Hello, we are still in England, and we're actually sitting in a kitchen in Reading. And Craig and I are staying with
a very old friend of ours, Washington State, like that. A good friend of ours.
A long time.
Long time. Excellent. That's even better. Who actually sort of knew Craig and I at the beginning of our time as artists. And so, hello, Julia.
Hello.
Hello. So, Julia and Craig and I, we went and saw two shows yesterday. So, the first one we're going to talk about is Merrily We Roll Along. So, Craig, tell me what Merrily We Roll Along is.
Merrily We Roll Along is the story. It's the story of three friends told over the time of two decades. They're artists. Two of them, one is a lyricist, one is a composer, and the other is a writer, a novelist. And it shows their relationship as very close friends as they meet as youths, and then how the Hollywood machine, the arts industry, tears them apart to the end. And the way the story is told is it's told in reverse chronological order, so that the beginning of the show we see the ruins of their friendship, and we slowly see it built back together throughout the course of the play as we go back in time.
So Craig and I have seen a production of this. Was it this year?
No,
last year. Okay, and it was a pretty heartbreaking one. We were really looking forward to it, and it didn't live up to it. And we were trying to decide if it was the show that we didn't like or if it was the casting that was so poor, because the characters have to go from 40 to 20.
And I think the show is, I've always thought it was kind of impossible, because see, this was Sondheim's first major failure, because it ran for 17 performances on Broadway, and it closed.
Really?
That's as long as it lasted.
Wow.
It was a dismal failure out of town. Like, casting people were, casts came and gone, creative staff were fired.
They jumped the whole costume concept when they did it originally on Broadway. They all wore t-shirts
with their names on them, no one could understand who was who during the show.
Which the Broadway audience hated.
Yeah.
So they
kept retooling the show over and over again. They thought, well, maybe it's the telling the story backwards that the audience doesn't get. So they tried productions where they told the story forwards, and that didn't work.
And when we saw it last time, I was too questioning. I was like, remember, this needs to do it forward. And when the way they did it backwards, I questioned that too. But now, having seen this production...
Oh, but to get to where you were talking, you were talking about casting.
Yes.
The issue with casting is that you're talking about characters that start as, what, 20?
In the chronology, they start at 20.
Yeah.
And they have to go to 40.
40. So that's quite a range. Like, that's a very big range for because, like, you could go from 40 to 60, but going from 20 to 40 is such a major
life change.
Range. Yeah, it's such a major life change, and your body changes so much that it's really hard to cast the show where you buy that they're changing ages throughout the play.
And the last production we saw, we didn't buy it at all.
No, they were actually too old for the...
Yeah,
for the
and then the original characters. Production, they went with teenagers. So they were all 20.
Yeah, I don't... That
and
probably
that
didn't
work
either, because you didn't buy that they were 40.
That they were 45. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so... And then we saw this production in London.
Oh.
In London at the Harold Pinter Theatre. And I think it was pretty much a quintessential production.
I loved it from the beginning of the play. I mean, the difference to me between this production and the one we saw in Cincinnati was night and day. I wouldn't even have understood that was the same show.
And Julia, you were saying that that's a show that you weren't familiar with.
No, I've not seen the show before. I know a lot of the songs because listening to Broadway soundtracks and stuff like that. And some of the songs are very recognizable, and you know them even without knowing the show.
Yeah.
So, never having seen it before, my opinion, my thought was that it was a fantastic production.
Yeah.
So,
Now, not having heard some of the songs before, were you surprised what the songs were really about when you saw the show?
What I really liked was the song had changed meaning as they continued, because as in Sondheim, they repeat themes and music throughout the play, and this one, the fact that in one instance the song had a certain flavor and a certain meaning, and then earlier or later in the play, earlier in their lives, it completely changed what they were saying, but singing the same song.
That Not a Day Goes By is what a heartbreaking song, because in the first time the character sings it, it's basically a divorce song. Mm-hmm. And then the next time they sing it, it's a wedding vow. And it's just like, just so heartbreaking. Now, you said something, Julia, which was really interesting about how important you thought the ensemble was in this production.
Yeah, I think that the ensemble of the production also had such a strong part to play. Like the three sort of main leads and then the secondary leads couldn't have been supported without the flavor that the ensemble gave, because the ensemble was really part of what made the growing back in time with costumes and just their attitude. So like the chorus, the attitude of the chorus really helped put the setting into.
They were the spine. They allowed the three main characters to do what they needed to do, which is such an interesting thing to remember, because so often, particularly when we are dealing with high schools, it's like, oh, I'm just chorus. Oh, I'm just chorus. I'm just in the ensemble. I'm not very important. And it's so essential, particularly in the larger musicals, that ensemble is the bass. And without the bass, the play doesn't succeed. And this is a perfect example of that, because when we saw the Cincinnati production, they also played instruments. So there was no bass support system from the ensemble, particularly in the sound.
Because the ensemble was playing musical instruments, so they couldn't sing loudly. They couldn't see. And I even think that cast was smaller than this cast.
Yes, it was.
And here you had a full orchestra, full ensemble, triple threat performers, and the sound was so huge in this show. Where I felt in Cincinnati, it was very thin. Mm-hmm. And apart from like the big torch songs, the rest of the music didn't really play very well. It sounded very mealy, because it didn't have that richness of sound.
And it really made the story and the show, it gave it the epicness that I think was originally intended. Mm-hmm. Another really interesting problem about this piece is that the main character, because we meet him when he's 40 and he's successful, he's essentially a sellout. He sells out every principal he ever had to become successful, and at the end of his life in the play, but the beginning of the play, we learn that he is miserable and he is just, it was all for naught.
And he's offended the people.
Burned every bridge.
He's just destroyed his whole life.
Yeah, his friendships are just, they're no longer.
And so it makes him pretty unlikable. Mm-hmm. And that is a real problem in any piece when you've got a main character who you can't connect to and you can't like. Because we're going backwards in his life, he just becomes more and more idealistic, more and more in love with
art and music.
But if you don't connect to him at the beginning, you don't care. And this guy, do you have his name? The guy who played Franklin Shepard, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I cared. And I wanted to go along
this
journey.
Even when he was being sort of the sellout kind of jerk character at the end, or at the beginning, at the end of his life, or the end of the story, you could still see flashes of what he was and his own regret. I think you saw that.
Yes.
Like, he didn't just play, I'm a jerk and I'm a sellout, but that's what I like. He you really got from him that these are the choices he's made. He's not necessarily happy with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives it a sort of more sympathetic view, because yes, he's made the choices that you wouldn't necessarily make, but he realizes that they're not necessarily the best or the ones that he would have made if he were a 20-year-old man.
Yeah, his name was Mark Umbers, and you're right, his performance at the beginning of the play when he's a jerk, you see the sum, it wasn't just a jerk, you see the sum total of what brought him there.
Yes.
It's a very delicate thing to do. And I also say the characters all brilliantly transitioned in age.
As they went down.
Goodness.
Well, there was a point, Julia, you said when they did the opening doors thing that you just thought, he's lost 15 years.
Yeah. They came up to the front of the stage. And so this is somebody you saw at 45, sort of 40-year-old guy. And then the song, just as they're starting struggling artists, sort of he's early 20s, and he's with his friends, and he looks up, and you just feel as if he's lost 15 years on his face when you're looking at him from the audience. Like, no. I don't know how they did that. Did they change his makeup backstage in one of the scene changes? Because he looked like a kid.
I think it's just in our brains. I think that's the beauty of theater, because the good stuff happens in the audience.
Oh, for sure. But it just, like, he looked up and you went, okay, I get him.
Yeah.
As a kid.
Fresh-faced kids.
And this is a theme on this trip, I think. No blackouts, scene changes in full view of the audience. It's all fine. See, we have this campaign against blackouts in the theater. It just works. It's not a problem to see people bringing... Yeah, we all know we're in a play. We can see other people. It's no problem just to bring furniture on.
Yeah.
We're not recreating life. Although, that's a really interesting segue, because I have been grappling, again, just because we're like, do I like this play? Was it because of the play? Is it because of the performance? And I just think it's fascinating. I have now seen this. I think this is the quintessential performance. This is the performance.
Best performance you can get.
This was the best performance. I thought the characters were well-rounded, wonderful acting, wonderful music, wonderful everything. And I've now seen a lot of Shakespeare, of Sondheim, and I have to say that this one still leaves me a little bit cold in the heart.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I am a 44-year-old artist who didn't go down this road.
Right.
I think what it is I really despise in my heart that this is really the only choice that was presented to me in the play. We know that Charlie went off and did his own thing, but that's not the artist's life that we were presented. And that's not anyone's problem but mine, I think. I think that you can't show... It's more interesting to show the flawed journey than the idyllic journey. But I think I've been thinking about what it is about that leaves me cold, because Company kind of does the same thing. We're left at the end with he's left with problems, and I don't think those problems are going to be solved. Sweeney Todd, everybody dies, you know. That is what Sondheim does. He brings to life the flaws. And I've just been thinking about what it is about Merrily that doesn't hold the same place in my heart as other ones. All right,
you're a writer, right?
I think it's because I'm a writer, that I'm at the same junction, and I never made those. It never crossed my mind to make these choices. Like Gussie's journey just floors me. Like the ruthlessness of her journey.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping to the top.
Yeah.
And then back to the bottom.
Again. Yeah, well.
and then.
Yeah. But, well, she ages. And for a woman who's a starlet, there gets to a certain point where...
There's going to be another one.
Yeah. She's no longer the freshest face on the block. So she's going through... what the other characters went through later on in the play or earlier on in the chronology. Yeah. It's hard to talk about
play. I know, it's hard to talk about the beginning or the end, because it's
But having said that, because we've had this discussion too about whether or not it works backwards front to backwards.
It worked backwards.
This production was so awesome. Yeah, that it has to be backwards.
It illuminated why it's backwards.
Yeah.
Because it was so strong at the beginning / end. It was so strong at the beginning of the play that you always have that sense of where it's all going. And that's what just makes it so sad at the end, that you know what this idyllic situation
These
is going
three
to become.
People who are energetic, following their dream, are so strong in their friendship that... you know that it's all just going to go to hell within 20 years.
Yeah. And they can be so idyllic, and it can be very saccharine at the end. They can play that to the hilt, because we all know.
Yeah.
It works. It's a balance.
Yeah, exactly. It's very sweet at the end.
We're
going to
write the best plays and change the world.
Yeah.
You know that's not happening.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how sweet and wow, those guys are rubes.
And it wouldn't work front to beginning to end.
Okay.
I think. No, okay, so tell me, what do you feel about
I really liked it. Like, I mean, I didn't have the same reaction. Now, I'm coming from somebody who's only heard a few of the songs mm-hmm. before. What I knew of the story was your briefing to me beforehand. It goes backwards in time, and it's the sort of falling part of their lives, and you see it reverse chronological order. So that's all I knew about the play. And I do think that I don't have the same sort of connection to art. So I did art in school, and I am a lover of art and appreciate it, but I myself am not in the industry. So I don't have that personal...
That makes you then a more of an ideal audience member.
I don't have that personal feeling towards what the character's story is. Mm-hmm. I just thought, oh, that's a really interesting way of telling that. And it's a sympathetic character, but he's a jerk at the same time. Like, I think that for me, because there is no possible way for me to connect with his choices, or my choices are different than his because I'm in a different industry. It just doesn't,
there's no equivalent in your life.
I can't be left cold by it because I don't have an opinion, or I can't agree or disagree about those choices as they pertain to me.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. I know full well that this is my idiosyncrasy. So it's really cool. I'm really glad to hear that just going in and appreciating the show, that it was a good experience.
I loved every second of it.
Yeah, that's
from the beginning, you know, I was girding my loins because I really, it's so funny because I really believe in this play. But I really believe I was beginning to think it was impossible to do it perfectly. And I think I saw like the perfect, as perfect as you're ever going to see performance of the show. I don't think it could. I think this is exactly
what meant
brings
to
that script to life. What we saw last night. And I must admit, I cried a little.
So did I. Like, well, that ending is so sweet. That it just hits you so hard.
Yeah.
Because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's what bothers me. Why can't you have a nice life as an... Anyway.
And then I cried twice yesterday because I cried in the other show we saw.
Okay.
Oh, my
goodness.
Absolutely bald.
So, we had a great day of theater yesterday because we ended with the Merrily We Roll Along. But we started with a farce... One Man, Two Governors, which was written by...
It was based on the Italian commedia play, The Servant of Two Masters. It was adapted by Richard Bean.
Who, I don't know who Richard Bean is, but
no.
He is brilliant. I thought this was a vehicle that was basically, we think, developed for a comedian whose name is...
James Corden.
It went to Broadway just for a short run, and then it's been running here. Did you see it here, Julie?
Yep.
Yeah. So when did you see it?
I saw it last December, so a year and a half
year?
Ago.
Oh.
And that was, it was well into its run at that point. Mm-hmm. It was about 8 months in.
So it's been going for, quite a while.
It had a brief visit to Broadway, and then it's back here now.
And there was a different man in the lead. So that sort of had everyone with some trepidation. I wanted to see it because I wanted to see something that was not a musical, but pretty quintessential...
English theater.
Mm-hmm. That's why we're here, you know? Like, why instead of... You know, the Thriller is playing here, you know? The Bodyguard is playing here. I don't need to see... Thriller.
You don't want to see Thriller live.
No,
there's still time. There's a matinee tonight.
And Craig, you had some reservations about seeing it.
Well, my reservations were that everything I ever heard about this show was James Corden, how brilliant he is. And then when they showed a clip on the Tony Award broadcast, it was just him doing a little Lotsy. And so my feeling was that it... Obviously, this show just relies on this one specific guy. And so I felt, well, what would be the point in seeing it without this guy? And I'm so glad that we decided to go because it doesn't rely on him at all. I mean, it's a great role. It's definitely the main character. I mean, he is the titular character. He is the servant. But there's so much more to the play, and there's so much more to the comedy than just him.
It's really a modern. It's a modern commedia.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I well,
it's
I just,
a modern commedia farce.
It's
little panto.
What I adored about it was that it was both style and substance. And what I mean by that, it was they were just so fully committed to these characters. The way you have to be in commedia, and just in physical commitment, character commitment, vocal commitment. It was never cheesy. It was full on. And I've never seen that. I've never seen such a committed, you know, a performance like that.
And there was something about the way they did takes to the audience, and like at punchlines, they would look at there'd be a look to the audience that I don't know how to describe it other than it was including the audience in the joke, but not winking at the audience saying, look how funny we are, which is what you see sometimes.
No, it was really character driven. And then there was also quite a bit of improv, which purported as improv.
I'm going to go with it.
I'm going to believe it's improv, you know, between the main fellow and the audience. And that's another thing. I've never seen that so committed and well done and just being in the moment, but yet really acknowledging what's happening in the audience. And I have to say, I think even the main guy was fantastic, but the other characters,
supporting characters, were just as good. And like at every character, you can think of a moment in the play where you were in fits of laughter because of that one character.
Right. Yeah.
Like it wasn't as if he's really funny and the cast supports his funny.
Yeah.
This character has a moment that's just absolutely hilarious. That character has a line that you're sort of floored by the line itself.
Yeah.
That's
what I think the massive failure in the publicity of the show is pushing that one guy. Because it's not at all, it's truly an ensemble piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, and the ensemble was insane. Like, I think my favorite character was, there was the lover.
The young lover.
Named Alan, whose real name is Orlando. But, you know, there's a lot
there
of
was already Orlando taken.
There was already an Orlando Daniel taken. And he was so committed. And I think he had the best lines. I got so excited. I was like starting to jot them down because
he was trying to be an actor, so everything about him was so intense. Like every time he'd move anywhere, it'd be plant and deliver pose.
And the one byplay with the public school boy and the actor. Are you an actor?
Yeah.
Well, why'd you say?
Yeah.
Sorry, it was a funny line.
and
the show was. I thought the show was stolen at the end of the first act by the guy who played
the waiter.
Yeah.
There's a guy
Alfie.
Who plays an 80-year-old waiter who, you know, basically...
He starts off as just, you think, well, it's just a doddering old man character. And that was funny enough with the physicality and the very slow walking. And, you know, the first thing he had to do was carry this tureen of soup and he has the shakes in his hand. And, you know, you're just fear for your life of where this soup's going to end up. But then it turned out that he, like a brilliant, intense physical performance.
Yeah.
Like he was getting thrown down stairs left, right, and center. He was getting smashed by doors. What else was happening?
Hit by cricket bats.
It was just a...
Picked up and thrown into a door at one point, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But that, I think we've hit it, that was the genius of the production, was it wasn't one man. It was a whole cast and an ensemble, and they worked together. And they all brought it to the table, and I've really never laughed so loud and so hard.
I think the only time I've had a similar reaction is when I saw Noises Off as a teenager.
Oh, okay.
Because Noises Off, especially a teenager who was in theater, I saw it at the West End when I came to as a teenager here, and that had the same sort of you're lying on the floor or trying to sit up straight because you're crying so hard.
Yeah, there were times I actually I covered my eyes because I couldn't see, I couldn't process any more information. I had to finish doing the laughing that I was doing before I could move on.
I'm pretty sure that we were laughing too hard because the people next to us left at intermission, but I don't think it was anything to do with the play. I think it was sitting next to me.
Well, that's their problem then. They can't enjoy it. That's their problem.
And you were writing down lines. I was practicing little moves that I was seeing on stage. Oh. Like everyone had like a little move as they came on stage or when they walked off stage. There was like this, it was little comedian-inspired little bloop, little turns of the feet and the...
Yeah, James Corden had the little... Yeah, not James Corden, sorry. Sorry to the actor, but the Francis Herschel.
Yeah, yeah.
He had that little... Hop step kind of thing as he's leading.
Yeah, brilliant physical.
Brilliant committed. If you are teaching Comedia to your students, you know,
this is the show
to see to really give a visual physical idea of what it really means to do Comedia. Because I think we get, because that we don't have a lot of, we just have books and we have, here's what a latte is. And what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean to take food to an excess? And what does that mean to follow a committed, character without being cheesy, without being, wink, wink to the audience. I think this is a excellent representation of what that means.
Yeah. I saw so many things that I'd only read about in books.
Yeah.
Just even, it was an old restoration theater and just to see the... You see drawings of how the scenery works in a restoration theater, the pieces that come on from the sides, but it was just completely different to actually see it and go, oh, okay, so it looks like that. You have this whole, it works in depth instead of flats, yeah.
And you've seen it twice, and you prefer James?
I prefer James Corden. However, James Corden is an actor that I know anyways.
Right.
I like him outside of seeing this. I went... seeing this, knowing James Corden and his work anyways, as a comedian, as a comic actor. So for me, going to see it the first time, it was to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And he delivered. He was fantastic. This time, it was to go see the play because I knew the play itself was strong enough no matter what. It was interesting comparing the two performances. I think the new guy, I don't know his name anyways. You have to pay for a program in England.
We don't pay for...
he was as good in terms of comparing it to... I think that James Corden just had the wide-eyed innocence a little bit more. Like, there was just a bit more of that... He's completely overwhelmed by the situation he's in.
He's put himself in, really.
Yeah, that's true.
And again, breezy from the beginning to the end. It started off with the about 15 minutes before the show starts, a band is on stage playing songs, getting everyone in the mood, and then boom, it just slides from that into the start of the play.
Blackouts.
Yeah, at the end of each scene, the drape would come down, the band would start playing before the curtain was down, they'd be on stage. Different actors in the play would come on and do little pieces with the band in between scenes.
Knowing how long that this play has gone on, I was just so impressed by how joyful it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even at the end, when they came out and they sang, because they sang a final song, yeah. I wouldn't have known that they
had a 2-year-long run.
No, and I find that wonderful.
It looked like so much fun. You just wanted to go and do that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it looked enjoyable. It looked like they were having fun, and it looked like they were thrilled to bits to present this show. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they don't feel that way, but they
put it on.
I felt that way.
I felt that way, and I think that's the most important thing. All right.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
for
Julia.
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Julia.
It was good to go out to theater.
Awesome. Bye.